You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Happy Tuesday, Fenway Rundown listeners, and welcome back to the show. I'm Chris Cotillo. Yes, I'm in Massachusetts, just along with many of you here, freezing, seeing the snow, the sleet, the rain, whatever's coming down. But just like the U.S. Postal Service, we are back with a new episode. Chris Smith and I will be heading back down to Fort Myers next week to conclude spring training. We are only, believe it or not, with the snow and the rain we're seeing today, only a couple weeks away from opening day. So time to get excited about the new baseball season. I've seen the excitement on Twitter, a lot of questions coming in, and so we turn to you, the listener, you, the reader, you, the tweeter today, for some mailbag questions. I like always opening it up, asking people to ask for, you know, what's on their mind, and seeing if we can, you know, answer it from the perspective of someone who covers the team. So happy to welcome on Matt Votor. He's going to be doing some of the hosting duties today, asking me your mailbag questions. We get to a lot of topics, give you a lot of answers, so appreciate Matt popping on there, and here we go. All right, as I said, on this Tuesday, we are going to be flipping the script a little bit. I am usually the one in this chair asking the questions, and today I'm going to be the one answering them. Pleased to welcome our columnist, Matt Votor, back to the Fenway Rundown I think last time we did the mailbag, Joey Aliberti was the one asking the questions. Matt, today you are going to be the one that is going to be our conduit between the fine people of Twitter and my answers here. So, we'll let you take it away. We had a lot of good submissions, and here we go.
Filling the big shoes of Joey Aliberti.
That's true, so, for sure.
All right. Well, let's go right with first question is about leading off, and that seems an appropriate for what we're doing here. This is from Anthony on the Cape, Ant on the Cape on Twitter, if you'd like to follow him. The question says this guy has the capability of being a sports writer here, because he says, talk right about who is the opening day pitcher and leadoff hitter.
Yeah, it's very, very Johnny Miller-esque with the talk about to start off a press conference. So I think it's pretty clear at this point that the opening day starter is going to be Corey Kluber. Alex Cora ruled out Chris Sale earlier in the week, saying that they just wanted him to come to, you know, opening day, enjoy the day, and then be ready to pitch probably Saturday in that second game of the season at Fenway. Kind of takes away the fanfare, the pressure. I know sports radio mocked that a little bit today, but, you know, I actually don't think it's a bad decision. You know, you don't want him to be even more amped up than normal. I think, you know, opening day with the flyover and all that stuff, maybe there is a little bit of a risk of overthrowing or trying to do too much and be under that spotlight. They want to do everything in their power to keep Chris Sale healthy, and I don't think it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So Corey Kluber will be on, barring an injury, the guy that takes the ball on March 30th for the Red Sox against Baltimore. Kluber, obviously, it'll be his Red Sox debut. Pretty accomplished guy, pitched in big spots before. I think it makes sense for them to do that. In terms of a leadoff hitter, I think that's a great question at this point in camp because we're not really sure, you know, exactly how the lineup is going to line up. A few guys that are, you know, going to be key producers for the Red Sox, whether it be Alex Verdugo, Kike Hernandez, obviously Rafael Devers, they are away from the team as part of the WBC. They are not, have not been in Grapefruit League play. We have not seen how Alex Cora has organized the lineup, but, you know, there are a few candidates. I don't think they're going to go with Yoshida in the leadoff spot like they said they were going to early. I think, you know, more likely candidates, Alex Verdugo is a guy there that could do it. Kike Hernandez against lefties. Kind of the outside the box guy is Tristan Casas, an on base guy. You know, he doesn't have the traditional frame of a leadoff guy. He gets on base at a high clip. He works good at bats. I could see them doing that. So I think it'll be a little bit of a mix and a match. You know, I would guess that, you know, Verdugo will get some chances. Kike, we might see Casas, Arroyo, maybe even Ref Snyder some days. Don't think it's going to be Yoshida a lot. I think Yoshida is going to probably hit fourth. I think you can pretty safely pencil in, you know, especially against righties, Devers second, Turner third, Yoshida fourth, and probably Duvall fifth. That might lead to, you know, a guy like Alex Verdugo getting a chance to lead off. So that's still, I think, one of the bigger storylines that has yet to be determined or finalized with a couple weeks left to go before opening day.
You think Casas maybe that could be, you're talking maybe June, July, August, that he might settle into a role then, but with the same idea of if you're not starting Chris Sale because of the fanfare, Casas this early in his career, maybe you wait to put him in that spot?
Yeah, definitely possible. You know, I think the Red Sox, you know, want to ease. They've in the past wanted to ease guys in. You know, Trevor Story was a guy who could have let off last year, and they didn't do that right off the bat because they wanted to ease him in and give him, you know, some time. So, you know, if Casas is hitting and if he's showing that great on base, and a guy like Verdugo or Kike or one of those guys doesn't work out, you know, I think Casas could do it. We've seen Alex Cora play around with it in spring training. You know, leadoff spot's been one that has kind of been a rotating cycle the last few years. And if they can find somebody to really, you know, anchor the lineup at the top, I think they'll be happy with that.
All right. The next question comes from the New Royal Rooters at New Royal Rooters on Twitter. Are you hearing anything about how the pitchers like working with Reese McGuire? Does Tech, Jason Veritek, say anything about his catching skills?
That's a good one. The Red Sox clearly think that Reese McGuire is capable of being an everyday catcher. You know, if you look at the pitching staff, it's obviously, you know, there's some guys that Reese McGuire got to learn, you know, last year down the stretch. Nick Pivetta returns to the rotation. He worked with Bayo, Whitlock, Houck, some of those returning guys. There's a lot of guys he's got to learn for the first time. You know, Paxton and Sale did not pitch last year. McGuire was acquired after Sale was done for the year, and obviously Paxton was out. Kluber's new to the staff, Chris Martin, Kenley Jansen, all these guys. So, you know, there is there's a lot of people that he's going to have to learn. And I think that learning experience has been good so far. He does work very, very closely with Jason Veritek. We've seen that time and time again, you know, throughout spring training. They're kind of on a mat right outside the clubhouse working together. Veritek is a very hands-on role with the catchers. And, you know, the Red Sox are clearly valuing the defense at catcher, you know, at more than the offense, just like teams throughout baseball. So I feel like they feel comfortable with it, you know, and anything McGuire can give them offensively is a bonus. You know, I think we saw last year he hit, I think, 337 down the stretch. That's not going to happen again. But if he can receive and call games and all that type of stuff, they're going to be happy with it. You know, it'll be a learning curve for any catcher, even if it was Christian Vasquez with, you know, so many new pitchers on the staff, a whole new bullpen. I didn't mention Blyer and Jolie Rodriguez and a lot of these rookies that are coming up too. So, you know, the fact that there's not that much familiarity, if it was Vasquez, it wouldn't have mattered that much on a changing pitching staff either.
All right. Next question comes from Red Seat Radio at Red Seat Radio on Twitter. With just the sheer number of potential starters on this team, one, with a fully healthy rotation, we'll pause there just for the potential humor of that.
Right.
Who are the odd men out? And the second question, if guys like Mata, Crawford, Walter, Murphy are doing well in AAA, where would they fit on this team?
you know, I've been saying all along, and this comes straight from kind of the horse's mouth and Chaim Bloom and other Red Sox decision makers have been saying, they have felt for a long time like they are, you know, 11, 12 deep in terms of starters, right? You know, the big seven in the major leagues, if healthy, Sale, Paxton, Kluber, Bayo, Whitlock, Houck, and Pivetta. And then you have, I think, Cutter Crawford, probably the next guy up. Josh Winkowski was in the majors last year. So we're already at, what, nine? And then to fill out the dozen, Brian Mata, Brandon Walter, Chris Murphy, all guys we saw in spring training who are going to start the year in AAA. You know, they felt comfortable enough with those 12 to, you know, surprisingly cut a guy like Connor Siebold. I don't think anybody thought Connor Siebold was a world beater, but, you know, he's probably 13th on this depth chart. And last year he was, what, you know, 7th or 8th? So, you know, to me, I feel like they do have a lot of depth to answer the question. With a fully healthy rotation, you know, I was always guessing that Pivetta and Houck would end up in the bullpen. On this show about a month ago, Chaim Bloom said they don't want to move Bayo to the bullpen. They don't want to move Paxton to the bullpen, and they don't want to move Whitlock to the bullpen under any circumstances. So you pencil those three guys in as starters. Chris Sale, Corey Kluber, they're locked into your rotation if healthy. To me, that kind of makes it seem like, you know, those are, you know, guys that's your five, and Pivetta and Houck. You know, Pivetta doesn't want to go to the bullpen. He's made that clear publicly and privately so far, but, you know, I think he's going to get a chance to start because of the injuries. I think he's a guy that could factor in as a long guy or as a reliever, you know, later in the season. And Houck, you know, with the arsenal, we've seen him be really successful out of the bullpen previously. He makes a lot of sense there. Part two with some of those AAA guys, you know, obviously with all the injuries in the rotation that we've seen throughout the years and, you know, even so far in camp with Bayo being a little delayed and Whitlock being a little delayed and Paxton's hamstring. You know, Crawford is going to get a chance probably to crack the team in the opening day rotation. He's had success in the majors before. And, you know, and Mata, Walter, and Murphy are going to be kind of your insurance policy behind everyone else. You know, if they're in it down the stretch, those guys could come up and be, you know, high leverage relievers. I think some people think Mata has the stuff to do it. So, you know, I think they're excited about, you know, like I said, the dozen guys they have. To me, you know, once healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if Pivetta goes to the bullpen. You know, he's been shaky in spring training. We saw that again today. I know it's so weird to say that about a guy who led the team in innings and starts and all that a year ago, but just the reality of where this team is and with all the health risks, you don't want to put Paxton in the bullpen. You don't want to put Sale or Kluber or Bayo or Whitlock. So that's what makes sense to me.
You said you don't want to put Whitlock in the bullpen. He'd been so good there in stretches. What you think his upside is higher as a starter, or what he can contribute higher as a starter?
I think the Red Sox are just at a point, and I said this on another podcast a couple weeks ago, they're just so sick of seeing their best arms kind of wasted as relievers. You know, whether that, you know, I don't know if you even think that, you know, dates back to Daniel Bard or whatever. You know, Matt Barnes is a guy that was a rotation candidate, top pick, that, you know, he had a good career here and ended up, you know, second all time in appearances and all that type of stuff. But he's going to provide you fewer innings as a reliever than a starter. You know, in a perfect world, they want their best pitchers to be starters if they're capable of doing it. That includes Tanner Houck, that includes Whitlock, that includes Bayo, and eventually, you know, Mata. And Alex Cora has said, as an organization, we have to stop, you know, having these guys be relievers full time because, you know, so much more important to get the innings out of them. So that, I think they still, you know, appreciate that, and that's kind of the goal. With Whitlock, they've looked at him as a starter, you know, for years, despite the success as a reliever the last couple of years. You know, his contract was done with incentives that he will hit if he is in the starting rotation. So obviously he wants to be doing that. He wasn't actually bad out of the rotation last year. He wasn't, you know, yeah, I think Alex Cora put it well when he said he's human, you know, out of the bullpen. I don't think he, you know, he didn't give up runs for months, but out of the rotation, he was, you know, two or three runs in six innings. That's a pretty good start, but it just wasn't what we were used to from him. So the expectations are super high for a guy like Whitlock, but no, I don't think that they, you know, want to experiment with him in the bullpen again.
A similar question from Marky D on Twitter at the Marky D. Cora mentioned that the team will meet on Wednesday to discuss the structure of the pitching staff to start the season, with Houck and Crawford tentatively taking the last two spots in their rotation and six bullpen spots locked up. Which arms do you think start the season in the pen? You addressed that. When you think about guys like Houck, guys like Pivetta, you think that both the combination of their arsenal of what they their stuff in their mentality, you think that the bullpen that their kind of makeup fits in the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, we saw that with Pivetta in the 2021 ALDS, right? I mean, you remember sitting in the press box at Fenway, looking down at him, dancing off the mound like a maniac and going nuts in those spots, and he was excellent. You know, Hauk is a guy that...
Papelbonian.
It was, right. Without the, you know, probably without the cutting chickens' heads off on Twitter videos, but, you know, that's a one-of-a-kind guy right there. I think that, you know, Pivetta fits mentality-wise. The thing that I would be slightly concerned about with the Red Sox is he's said already publicly in an interview with Tara Sullivan of the Globe, he doesn't want to be in the bullpen. He's a starting pitcher, all that type of stuff. He's kind of bristled at the idea that he could move to the bullpen because he fancies himself as a starter. And, you know, I think he's an ultimate competitor at the end of the day. If they did move him there, he would just have to do it. And, you know, is he going to pitch badly on purpose? No. I would worry about the buy-in to a role that he really has made clear that he doesn't want to do. That's just a minor thing, but a real thing, because, you know, the quote, I think, to Tara was, "I'm a starting pitcher. I don't know any other way. That's what I want to do." When guys are in that mindset, kind of hard to talk him out of it. Ultimately, though, you know, the call comes down to Heimblum, Alex Cora. Kind of going back to Mark's question a little bit, you know, I think you kind of look at the bullpen and a roster projection we did last week. Obviously, there are, you know, kind of big names and veterans that are locked in, whether it be Jansen and Martin from the right side. John Schreiber's got a spot from the left side, Richard Bleier and Jolie Rodriguez. So that's your five. And I think we're assuming Ryan Brazier is in there as your sixth guy. You know, if Crawford and Hauk are in the rotation to start the year, and like we've said a billion times, Bayo, Whitlock, Paxton, they'll probably start on the IL and not be there for long. You know, expect all three of them probably to be back by the end of April. You have two, you know, bullpen spots for some, you know, some of these interesting minor league guys to make an appearance or make the team. You know, I think we've seen a few of these guys get optioned already. Some of the starters, the three there that make a lot of sense, they have options. They're still on the roster. Caleb Ort, Zach Kelly, Wyatt Mills. I think you'll see a lot of those guys in different roles as kind of rovers throughout the year, coming back from AAA to the majors. Remember, a big part of the reason they cut Matt Barnes was because he didn't have options available. These guys do. I think we'll see two of those three on the opening day roster. And, you know, if one of those guys is hot, like John Schreiber was last year, you know, they'll have a pretty big role by the end of it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm going to ask two questions together here, because we have two questions about Grapefruit League phenom Raimel Tapia. So Jorge Alfaro and Raimel Tapia if Jorge Alfaro, this is from Andrew Meehan at Mandrew He-Man on Twitter.
Creative.
If Jorge Alfaro and Raimel Tapia make the team, the Red Sox would need to trade DFA two players currently on the 40-man to make room. Who would be your guess as to who that would be? And then the second question comes from G, who is at BoRedSox412 on Twitter. His question is, thoughts on Tapia making the team over Jaron Duran?
Yeah, those are two good ones. I think that, you know, those are kind of the roster battles at the back of the roster that, you know, every team wants their non-roster invitees to push and, you know, look for spots. I think these were the two, you know, highest upside minor league deal guys the Red Sox signed. Obviously, both played a ton in the majors last year, Alfaro in San Diego, Tapia in Toronto. He dominated at Fenway, you know, and they both, you know, been really good. You know, Alfaro before he left for Colombia was excellent. For playing the World Baseball Classic, Tapia's, as you said, been excellent. I think he hit another homer today. So, the way the contracts of those guys work makes me think that both will make the team. As we reported a couple weeks ago, Alfaro has an upward mobility clause, which sounds very fancy. Basically, it comes down to this. If a team wants to put him on their active roster, the Red Sox have to grant that or match it, meaning they have to put him on the active roster, which he's not on right now. In the case of Raimel Tapia, he just has a clean opt-out. And so if the Red Sox don't place him on the active roster, he can just become a free agent. It's close, but not the same thing. Basically, if another team's interested in either player and wants to put them on the major league roster, which you'd expect, you know, interest in both of these guys, then the Red Sox would risk letting them go. To me, that makes it seem like, you know, they have the edge. And the Red Sox have roster flexibility to make that happen. They carry Alfaro over, say, Wong, who maybe starts in the IL or maybe starts in AAA. Then, you know, they get to keep Wong in AAA and Alfaro and see what they have in him early part of the year. If they did the opposite, they, you know, risk losing Alfaro. And the same thing, the same exact thing happens with Tapia versus Duran. You know, like Duran has options. He can go down to the minors and kind of be, you know, your extra outfielder down there. If you keep Duran over Tapia, then you risk losing Tapia to another team. And I don't think they want to do that. So, you know, thoughts on making Tapia making the roster over Duran. I think just based on that fact, you know, probably happens. I think they like what they have out of him, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him there. And then the question from Andrew, you know, they need to trade or DFA two players currently on the 40-man to make room. This has not been an easy, you know, thing for the Red Sox so far, because, you know, we've seen them, you know, over the course of the offseason had to make some really difficult decisions. Matt Barnes, Connor Siebold, as we touched on, but, you know, Franklin Hermann and some of these other guys, Hosmer, Darwinson, Jeter Downs, a lot of these guys that, you know, are, you know, notable names. So the fact that they, if they need to carry these two guys, have to get rid of two more of them, I think is going to be a notable decision. You know, I think you know, watch some of those 60-day injured list situations. That's always a way to make a move. Willier Abreu is a prospect who got hurt. Alex Cora said he'd be out for a while. There's always weird when you, you know, 60-day IL a guy who's never made his debut because it starts his service time clock. I don't know if they want to do that. But I guess that's one way they could do it. You know, Adalberto Mondesi, you put him on the 60, he's out until, you know, pretty much June 1st. I don't know if they think he's going to be back before then. That's a possibility. And then you kind of get into the DFA candidate part of the team. And I thought we had another question about Dahlbeck's chances of making the roster. And, you know, to me, Dahlbeck's a DFA candidate here. You know, I'm surprised that he wasn't traded already, but he's a guy that's not a clean fit for the roster. You know, Justin Turner is going to be the platoon partner for tosses at first base. I think, you know, Jorge Alfaro, if he's on the team, he's a righty who can play first base and DH for you and provide some pop. Yu Chang, you know, another guy who, you know, can cover some infield spots. And we just saw what he did in the World Baseball Classic. So to me, you know, Dahlbeck kind of makes sense there as a trade DFA candidate. And if you're looking at the pitching staff, you know, not a lot of spots, but, you know, a guy like Caleb Ort, you know, I think they probably want to keep Mills and Kelly over him. You know, if you have to pick a guy there, that could be the guy. So, you know, some interesting decisions, you know, left to be made for the Red Sox. They could, I guess, even trade, you know, someone else off the 40-man to clear a spot. I think they want to keep everybody they can, keep the depth, because they know how important the depth is. But, you know, those decisions that I mentioned are due in about 10 days on March 25th, that last week at camp. It'd be pretty interesting to see, you know, what they do. But Alfaro and Tapia, you know, certainly fit the team well, and they certainly have earned a spot.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if somebody else were to lose a corner, have an injury on another team to a corner guy, could Dahlbeck get traded in that scenario?
He was a guy that he drew interest this year. You know, he was a guy that I think Sean McAdam had reported at one point that he, you know, was a guy that was drawing interest from the Rays. You know, I think the Red Sox probably terrified of that outcome, because he goes down there, he's automatically a, you know, a 350 hitter and 40 home runs and the Rays way and all that type of stuff. So, but nothing came to fruition, and here we are, he's still on the roster, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's not for long.
All right, next question. We're winding down here from Zach BLM, Blackheart Red Sox, baseball, UMass hockey, NC Dinos, $8.
You forgot a sword. Also, I think it's Dinos.
Dinos, okay.
Yeah.
What is that?
I think it's a team in Korea, isn't it?
Oh, okay. I saw, yeah. NC. Anytime I'm with you on NC, I assume this is going to be some kind of North Carolina.
Oh, no. No, it's next.
This is at Zoidberger. on Twitter at Zoid Burgerer.
Burgerer.
Yeah. Anyway, and this is important. It's an important question, and I know people have been wondering this. If you had to go out for ice cream, now I'm going to stop right there. There's never a have to go out for ice cream with.
Yeah,
with,
if I wanted to.
With Chris Catello. This is if he had the opportunity to go out for ice cream with one player on the Sox or in spring training, who would it be?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question.
I'm going to have some follow-ups to this, let's be clear.
Yeah, I mean, on the current team, I don't know. I don't always like revealing who, you know, I think the best guys on the current team are versus the guys that, you know, give the media trouble. I think Rafael.
Let's look at it this way. Which guy let's talk about some guys that you think might have some insight on where they might find some good ice cream.
The Rafael Devers scoops thing has been going on for a long time. I think he's the poster child for Red Sox and ice cream. You know, I just play a bit role in the background. So I think you got to go with the safe bet there. I will say, you know, I'll talk about some former guys that, you know, used to cover that I think would be, you know, good for an ice cream. A guy that just retired officially this week, and I want to pivot to you actually and put the spotlight on you, friend of the program, though he's never come on. Mitch Moreland was a great guy. I think he would be, great to share ice cream with. And this brings us back to my favorite moment of all with Mitch Moreland, Matt Vautour interviewing Mitch Moreland during the 2019 Stanley Cup final run. And Matt, you can take it away from here on this one.
Chris loves this story. So
yeah, it's my favorite.
So I was walking around. There's been over time some background, a nice synergy between the Boston sports teams rooting for each other when one of them is making a run. The Bruins were in the Stanley Cup Finals, and so I think I was going. I think I stopped in to do Clubhouse that day, and before going over to the Garden for something else, and so. I was asking guys that were in the clubhouse, of which there weren't a lot. Are you following along with this? Are you a hockey guy at all? And some of the guys, Chris Sale was, you know, Chris Sale likes hockey, and despite being from Florida, another not exactly a hockey state, was saying how that he doesn't know the Bruins guys terribly well, but was paying attention, kind of rooting for him, And Mitch Moreland said something to me along the lines of down he's from Mississippi and down there we just put ice in our sweet tea.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the only thing he knew about ice. So, and that's our little Mitch Moreland tribute on the day that there's some guys retire and some guys Rob Bradford forces to retire even though they haven't been playing for 2 or 3 years. So that was the case here.
So Chris, if you're let's expand this a little bit. Where are you if you have to take Rafael Devers or Mitch Moreland out for ice cream, where are you taking them?
Come on up to the press box.
No, we're not getting, we know machine. All about the soft serve machine. We're wondering where is the go-to spot outside of the press box? Because no athlete is intentionally going up into the press box.
We're partial to Yulman's in Westboro, aren't we?
Nice. There you go. That's an excellent call. And what are you ordering?
I'm a frap guy there. That's just if you can, the way I get the soft serve at Fenway anyway, it liquidates. So why not just kind of expedite the process?
For people outside of Eastern Mass, a frap is a thicker milkshake.
Yes, there you go. Nice, you get it. It's like the Vautour thesaurus. We appreciate it.
All righty. The final question that we have on the docket here comes from Chris Mason at by Chris Mason on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to know, what time does the North Carolina basketball team tip off on Friday?
Blow it all up. That's all I ask, Mason, for someone who went to Merrimack and does not watch college basketball, has really taken a shine to hating on the Tar Heels over the last few years, which it's particularly easy to do right now with a team that was number one in the nation to start the year and made history by not making the tournament and then declining the NIT. So I'm all in on declining the NIT, blow it up, figure it out, be back next year. The blue blood, it's a powerhouse. You know, we're already on to 2023, 2024.
So do you think UNC is better than Merrimack? Merrimack won their conference.
I don't think
tournament.
They're better than anyone right now.
They could have been in. So no,
just it's, you know, we're on to next season.
So who do you have in your final four? It seems.
I mean, I haven't filled out the bracket yet. I would say after looking at the way Zach Edey plays over the weekend and a few Purdue games that I may or may not have had sprinkled some action on, that was, I mean, I find them hard to beat. I know they always find a way to choke it away, but I take Purdue as my champion right now.
Purdue is your champion. And you have Duke in the final four or no?
They're getting bounced by Oral Roberts in the first round. You can mark that down. That's a mortal lock.
Nice.
Mercer, Lehigh, Oral Roberts. Print the shirts.
I was at that Mercer game.
Yeah. Well, it was before I hated him, but I appreciate the effort from Mercer anyway. Go Bears.
Nice. All right, that's what we have for questions.